It was a normal day. It was about 30 years or so after the very first Christmas. And the crowd had heard that Jesus was coming to town. You got to kind of put this into perspective. And a man came to Jesus with nothing but his belief, begging Jesus for help. I want to look at the first part of this again. It says, when they came to the crowd, a man approached Jesus and knelt before him. Lord, have mercy on my son, he said. He has seizures and is suffering greatly. He often falls into the fire or into the water. And I brought him to your disciples, but they couldn't heal him. We can only imagine what it must have been like, this boy who was severely challenged mentally, physically, emotionally, spiritually. We don't know. There's so many of the stories that we read in the Bible that require us, I guess, to read between the lines some to see what it really was like. It's these stories in the Gospels that I often will read them and then close my eyes and try to picture it. Try to picture the landscape. Try to picture the people standing and watching and try to picture what it really was like. This one doesn't take a whole lot of imagination. This boy was a mess. He was a complete mess. My guess is that Dad was also. Any of us who are parents and we see our children struggling, it turns you into a mess quickly. He had brought his son earlier to the disciples, but they couldn't help him. I don't know why. They appeared to have the power and the strength to do that, but it didn't happen right then. So this dad is kneeling, humbling himself, almost pleading with Jesus, the last resort. Will you please help my son? And I read this story, and I guess I relate to it some as a dad. I relate some to it because of having spent my life with kids, and I know that struggle. So let me tell you this. Sooner or later, you're all going to be on your knees begging. It's part of the life equation. Sooner or later. Now, some of you have already spent a fair time on your knees, haven't you? Begging. Begging God to fix the mess. Maybe it wasn't your kids. Maybe it wasn't something as big as a kid with epilepsy and uncontrollable seizures living at near death. Maybe it was a job. Maybe it was the illness of a family member. Maybe it was a marriage. Maybe it was fill in the blank. Maybe you're riding the crest of a whole lot of good right now in your life. We don't want to rob any of your joy. But sooner or later, you're going to be back on your knees. That's what happens to us. Everybody will. Now, I'm going to say something about the elephant in the room, even though you don't see it. It's here. It's here every year at this time, and I acknowledge it every year at this time. I'm just not going to say much about it today. I'm going to talk around it a little bit. But the elephant in the room is, the older I get, the more that the months and years pass for me, the more I realize that the holiday season is a really, really difficult time for the majority of people. When I first started preaching years ago and teaching, We would reference the fact that, oh yeah, during the holiday season, there's some depression that floats around out there, and there's some people that really struggle during that time, and all of us who are having a, as the video said, a fa-la-la-la-la time with our life, we need to be sensitive to those handfuls of people who have lost loved ones or who are struggling or whatever during the holidays. Well, I'll tell you, if just my counseling schedule is the only thing to look at, the majority of people are struggling during the holidays now. And it's just a handful of people that can bop around and enjoy this thing without being affected by the holidays. That's how I see it anyway. The facts and figures about depression during the holidays, it blows me away. It absolutely blows me away to see the struggle that people have, especially during this time. And so that's the elephant in the room. We talk here at Christmas, and we love Christmas, and we love the songs and the memories and everything that goes along with this time of year. But it is something that we also hold on to very carefully, because that may not be true for you and for the ones that you love the most. So we'll step lightly through this. We will, all through the season. The story continues in the next couple of verses. Jesus looks at them and goes, I wish I could be Jesus sometimes, because, man, can he say the brutal stuff so easily? And it seems like very little repercussion sometimes, although they did hang him on a cross. You unbelieving and perverse generation, how long shall I stay with you? How long shall I put up with you? Bring the boy here to me. Now, I may be reading a little bit into this, but I hear a little bit of voice inflection here. Just a little bit. Just a little. So Jesus rebuked the demon, and it came out of the boy, and he was healed right there. When Jesus said this, you are a perverse and unbelieving generation. I don't think this was a criticism of the man who brought his son. The man had faith. The man brought something to Jesus that was pretty precious. I think the statement that he's making is to his disciples and to the onlookers. Somehow, even the followers of Jesus got it wrong. We always get it wrong. They were unbelieving. They were nearsighted. They were out of focus. Somehow a lot like us. Isn't it amazing that at Christmas time, no matter how our life is going at any given time, there's a part of us that approaches Christmas like children. It's like the only way to do this. You talk to people that are having a bad time at Christmas, the one thing that will turn their moment around, their day around, is go, but think of the kids. Think of the kids. Think of the little kids getting the presents and unwrapping them. Especially think of the kids who don't have very much. And that will turn even the hardest heart soft for a moment, is to think about children. Children who are full of wonder and imagination. They haven't gotten to be like old and wise high school students who now are you know, realists about the world, you know. You guys still want presents though, don't you? Oh yeah, okay, good. I know. Children especially, full of imagination and wonder and excitement and dependence. And then we all grow up and we lose our humility somewhere along the line. We lose our sense of need. We get spoiled and we get forgetful and we get prideful. We think we know better. And out of that begins to build a seed of an unbelieving heart that gets a little jaded along the way because somewhere God hasn't come through for us in just the way that He always did when we were children. Things get upside down and messed up, and we get really self-sufficient, too smart for our own good. I want to remind you, again, sooner or later you're going to be back on your knees. It's what happens to humans along the way. Jesus seems almost perturbed in this story, doesn't he? Now, it just made me, maybe me reading between the lines, but I hear a little bit there. He sees the source of the boy's problem. He heals him right there. Well, of course he can. He's God. He can heal anybody he wants whenever he wants. And that moment, can you imagine? Can you imagine for just what it must have been like for that dad and for those who were standing around watching, and all of you that are cynics in the room right now going, that was just Jesus and it's a Bible story. Nah, this is history in my book. This is history. This is a recording of something that actually happened. It was amazing and it was thrilling and it was life-changing, and I have no doubt that it stunned the crowd, and there were people standing around with their mouths wide open going, did you see what just happened? All at the same time, there is embarrassed silence from the disciples going, yeah, we knew that was going to happen all along. Look at verse 19 in this story. Then the disciples came to Jesus in private and asked, how come you got to do that and we didn't? Why is it that we were trying that stuff? You know, we were trying to snap our fingers and we were waving our hands and we hit him in the forehead and we did all the stuff and it didn't happen for us. Why did it happen for you, Jesus? It's not fair. Verse 20. He replied, because you have so little faith. Truly I tell you, if you have faith as small as a mustard seed, you can say to this mountain, move from here to there, and it will move. Nothing will be impossible for you. And we sit here 2,000 years later going, this story doesn't make any sense at all. Not at all. In fact, it didn't make a whole lot of sense to the disciples as they were living it out. Earlier, and we can read about this even in the book of Matthew, Jesus had empowered the disciples to go and cast out demons. He had given them the power to do that. He had given them the power to go and heal people. Go out in the countryside. Be my representatives. And where you go and you find people that are sick, you can heal them. If you find demons, you can cast them out. But the disciples couldn't heal this kid. He told them they didn't have enough faith. Anybody here relate to the disciples right now? Does it feel like you sometimes? Me too. But faith in what? What is it that we are to have faith in? You know, for it to work. Now, I want to caution you that I don't think that faith is something that you just go out and, like, you go to the gym and you start working out on the machines and all of a sudden you look down and you see your biceps are starting to bulge and that faith works the same way. I don't think that it does. So we have to be careful about what it is that we are placing our faith in. And so I want to suggest today that what it is that we have faith in is that we have faith in the words of Jesus. Now there's more to it than this, but for today I just want you to pause and think about the words of Jesus. Jesus says, if I say you can move a mountain, All you have to do is believe that you can move a mountain. Look, has anybody ever moved a mountain by words? I've never heard of that. And I'm telling you, that would be on Facebook immediately. And then nobody would believe it because they'd go, well, it was Photoshopped, and who can believe anything there anyway? You know, so it's, you know. No, you never seen anybody move a mountain by just walking up to a mountain and go, yeah, move. Doesn't seem to work that way. It's ridiculous. And I'd like to suggest that Jesus is not giving them the power to move mountains. Although I've read books and I've heard people say, yeah, that if you had enough faith, you could actually move a mountain. Maybe so. I don't think that's what he's telling them, though, right now. He's saying to them that they need to trust him for what he said. Because he said some pretty important things. Jesus says all you need is a tiny amount of faith. Small as a mustard seed. I don't know if you've ever seen a mustard seed, but if you held a mustard seed in the palm of your hand, it would just look like a tiny dot, a little bit bigger than a pin head. That's the size of a mustard seed. If I were to hold one up, you could never see it from where you are sitting. That's how small the mustard seed is. So Jesus is going, hey, it doesn't take much faith. Just make sure the faith is in the right place. Faith the size of a mustard seed doesn't generate a great deal of expectation. It can't, because it's so small. So here's a kingdom principle for us who are children of the King. In the kingdom, people, situations, circumstances that we face are not limited to how they appear. There is more going on all the time. God is going on all the time. And when he is taken at his word, those things that feel like mountains, move. Move. Make no mistake, Christmas is about faith. And we can talk about the contrast between the buying of presents and the baby in the manger and everything in between. But when it comes right down to it, Christmas is about faith. It's not simply about catchy songs and good feelings and family traditions and what it has turned into in our country, this pseudo-religious experience that you can talk about Christmas, but you don't have to honor the one born on Christmas Day. Christmas is about a faith in one who does move mountains. That's what Christmas is all about. But it's also about having faith in one whose words, when they are trusted and put into practice, don't just move mountains, but explode mountains. Look, I don't think Jesus was for a second talking about literal mountains when he said that they could be moved. Mountains are problems. Every one of us in this room know what mountains are. Doesn't matter how old you are, you know what a mountain is. Death, sickness, trouble, family crisis, alcohol abuse, unpaid bills, rebellious children, stale marriages, uncontrolled anger, lying friends, broken relationships, calloused hearts, fear, failure, hunger, terrorism, disease, no water, inadequate housing. Hey, I can go on. And every one of them are mountains. And however close you are to that mountain, the more real that mountain feels right now. Because it's your mountain. It's the one you are facing. And this season just seems to bring out more of that. The intensity. The true meaning of Christmas is that we can face a world of impossibilities with the God of the impossible. It's what he says. By faith, every one of us in this room have access to the improbable. We have access to the implausible. I'm giving you other words. I don't know where you're at today. I don't know what you're feeling today. But you have access to the amazing and to the outrageous. You have access, you personally, me personally, we have access to the omnipotent, to the majestic, to the holy. What's your mountain today? You got one. There may be some people that know a little bit about your mountain. There may be some people who know a lot about your mountain. You may be just sitting alone on top of your mountain today, and we can't even see the mountain underneath you. But every one of us have access to the answer. Christmas is about faith. Not faith in people. Not faith in goodness. Not faith in family. Not faith in traditions. But faith in the words of the one who backed them up. Jesus. This baby that was born in a manger that we sing pretty cute songs about. I want you to walk out of here today believing that if you believe in Christmas, if you are one of those people that are fighting to put the reason back into the season or whatever the new catchphrase is today, be careful what you are asking for if you want Jesus to get back in the meaning of Christmas. Because you are asking for this baby to rock your world. That's what you're asking for. You're not asking for just to have a little happiness and a little Christmas cheer along the way. Faith. Faith is trusting that God will surpass what we think we need or we think that we want. Because His Word says, will give you more than you could ever ask or think. That's what this baby specializes in. Faith. Faith is about relinquishing the outcome. Faith is relinquishing the ownership of the outcome of any given event that you are in. Because His promises of a secure future are bold for those who walk by faith. Faith is confidence that I will have everything that I could possibly need to face any situation that I could possibly find myself in. Because His Word says, every need of mine is met in Jesus. Faith is knowing I have nowhere else to turn. Because His Word says that He will be with me no matter what. Hey, I got to tell you, this baby came along to do a lot more than to give you some fuzzy feelings during December. Okay? He came to change everything. I want to remind you that the Christmas story begins with these words, okay? Christmas story in the Bible begins with these words. This is in the middle. And there were shepherds living out in the fields nearby, keeping watch over their flocks at night. An angel of the Lord appeared to them, and the glory of the Lord shone around them, and they were terrified. But the angel said to them, "Do not be afraid. I bring you good news that will cause great joy for all the people. Today in the town of David, a Savior has been born to you. He is the Messiah, the Lord. This will be a sign to you. You will find a baby wrapped in cloths and lying in a manger." Do not be afraid. I bring you good news that will cause great joy for all the people. It may not feel like there is good news in your life. Maybe there is. But whatever news you are facing and whatever mountain you are sitting on, no matter what, the news that Jesus brings is bigger and better than anything that you could conjure up on your own. That's why the baby came. That's why we celebrate Christmas. I want you to consider coming. I hope your schedule does. Consider coming next week. I'm gonna talk about fear, a kind of fear that we all experience on some level or another. It's important stuff. But I want to remind you that the baby was born to help you face fear. That's why he came. Father, thank you that you came to give us not just new life, but to give us hope to face that which we struggle with. It's my prayer that the baby won't just be a picture on a wall or an ornament on a tree or even a story out of a book that we read. We want him to be real to us each day. We want to be people of faith. It's our prayer that you would help us get there. In Jesus' name, amen. We're going to share communion today. We always do. I was reading this this week. It's fascinating to me. There is a movement in the greater church world all around. This is hilarious to me. Across all denominations, they're making a move because their theologians and their great thinkers and writers and pastors are all reconsidering the idea that communion needs to be taken weekly. It cracks me up. And I want to go, hey, we've been doing it all along. You know, you don't need to have a seminary degree, you know, to figure this out. One of the things they are figuring out is that there is something healing to the community and to the individual to spend time in community life, sharing communion with each other. The more, the better. Because it is in these moments that we remember not so much the birth of Jesus, and really not so much the death of Jesus, but we remember the promises of Jesus. When we come to the table, when we take the bread and we take the juice and we pause just for a moment and look at each other or remember the people we are sitting with and we go, hey, we believe this stuff. That's what you're doing when you take communion. I don't mean to devalue the sacredness of the experience, but in my vernacular, it is, wake up, people. We're taking this stuff right now, and we believe this story. This isn't just some religious ritual we're going through. We actually believe the words. Because the words make a difference. Because the words take us to the real person who backs up every word that he says. That's why we take communion every time we are together, and we'll continue to do that.